Mini episode 946 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at Sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 946. Just like at the beginning of the season, to break it all down in the NFL, you've got with you here NFL draft aficionados, NFL aficionados, and NFL playoff aficionados, FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Chris Galloway here, breaking it all down for you. Just to review on the regular season here, take a little victory lap. 130, 119, and 7 on my picks overall, 52.2%, leaving me tantalizingly close to my third consecutive 52.4% or better profitable for the season. I got to go 7-4 in the playoffs. Last year I had to go 8-3 to make it, and I made it just barely. 31, 18, and 2 on my big three, 12-5 on the year in my lock category. So, as the great Arn Anderson, great pro wrestling legend, once said, not to toot my own horn, but toot toot.
Well played, sir. Well played.
Thank you. So one of the things I want to get to in terms of revisiting something we said coming into the season here, before we take a look at the overall AFC bracket, is you and I both had Tennessee making the playoffs, and I've got my notes together for this week's preview that I am doing just for this week's games, and what I'm saying in there about Tennessee is, yeah, I saw this coming. I saw them being a playoff team, but this is not the scenario that I saw. They're just a mediocre team that kind of backed their way into the playoffs. You and I both saw them as having a breakthrough year, not being the team in the mud that's like, oh, okay, somebody's got to make it. I guess it's going to be them. That they lost all but one of their last couple of games. Mariota did not have a breakthrough season. This is not what you and I saw coming back in August when we said Titans to make the playoffs.
No, agreed. As you outlined, we both thought they'd be in the playoffs. I think we both thought they would be stepping up to sort of be a to win their division, probably be sort of an 11-5 type team. And for whatever reason, that didn't materialize. My guess is that that comes down to, as so it so often does, in terms of coaching, because there is a lot of talent on that team. They can run the football. And there's a lot of good young talent there, but they don't seem to win a lot of games that they should. And I don't think that Saturday is going to be any different.
I don't think so either. When you look ahead to the game that they've got at Kansas City there, a real donut hole season Kansas City's had. It's reminiscent of back in the days when I used to bowl pretty regularly there. Maybe go out and bowl a 205, second game might be a 145, third game might be a 215. I don't know what happened to Kansas City that middle chunk of the season there, but it was pretty god-awful. But they've at least snapped back fairly decently here. Problems defensively, as you're going to have when you have the injuries that they have, and particularly to what was a very good secondary coming into the season. But Tennessee doesn't look to be the team that's able to exploit them. Similarly, Jacksonville, Blake Bortles has been kind of turning back into a pumpkin recently, unsurprising for those who have followed his career. But Buffalo doesn't seem like the team to exploit it with LeSean McCoy limping around here. He says today, as we're taping this, oh, I'm going to be fine on Saturday, but I don't buy that, and I don't think anybody else does. So when you look at that, I've got Kansas City and Jacksonville advancing and then basically just being cannon fodder for New England and Pittsburgh. Do you see it the same way?
I see it similarly. I agree about Buffalo. Great story. Great to have them back in the playoffs. Fantastic fan base. And they've been about as long-suffering as Browns fans, and they deserve this opportunity. I would say if Shady was 100% healthy, I would think that the Buffalo would find a way to make that 95% Bills fans come game time. That being said, I expect them to put together a game plan that keeps the ball out of Bortles' hands, and they force Tyrod Taylor to try to win it through the air. I don't think he will, and I agree that Jacksonville will prevail. In the other game, you know, as we alluded to earlier, Kansas City's got their mojo back to some degree, and I haven't seen enough out of Tennessee all year to give me any faith in their ability to go into Arrowhead in January and punch them in the mouth and win that game. So Kansas City comes out, Jacksonville comes out, I agree. Where we disagree on that is that the nature of these two games. I agree that Jacksonville, you know, is going to go into Pittsburgh, you know, a place where they, I think those two games, I don't think you're giving them enough. You're saying cannon fodder, and I'm not.
Okay.
I guess is what I'm saying. Jacksonville has the type of team that gives the Steelers trouble. They can stop the run, and they can run the football. And since Ryan Shazier went down, the Pittsburgh Steelers have the worst run defense in the NFL. And so if the Jaguars decide to, you know, to ground and pound in the middle of January, I think the Jaguars could give the Steelers some fits. They are a team that matches up well physically against the Steelers. And, you know, look, the Chiefs, that's the 4 seed, and that's the team that the Patriots didn't want to see, in my opinion. Week one, the Chiefs went into Foxborough, punched them in the mouth, took them down, and their seasons went where they went. I don't think that this is the same Pats team that we've seen in the past. There's some weaknesses there. There's some holes there. And the coaching will certainly, you know, will be on, you know, advantage New England, home field advantage New England. And my guess is at that point, Alex Smith turns into a pumpkin, as he usually does. And the Pats win on a tight brawl of a game. I think both those second round games in the AFC are going to be fist fights. They're going to be a lot tougher than you think. I do think the Steelers and the Pats emerge from those contests, however.
Interesting. So we disagree on the stylistics of it, because I look at the bracket here in the AFC, and it looks to me the same exact way it did a year ago. Now, again, this weekend here with the spreads that the home teams are laying, particularly Jacksonville, I think it's up to like 8.5 at the moment here. You could see a scenario where Buffalo gets inside of that. But when I said I went 8-3 last year against the spread in the playoffs, a lot of that was based on, quite frankly, the AFC just looked like a layup to me, as far as you got New England and Pittsburgh sitting there waiting for the teams they're going to beat. Then you got Pittsburgh, who can never beat New England, didn't go to any of their 3 Super Bowls in the 21st century by going through New England. They basically did it by, like, putting out a bounty on them and having somebody, like, whether it be Rex Ryan's Jets or somebody else, get a fluke backdoor win over New England, and then they took them out. I think that it happened with the Colts the one time. So, you know, to me,
listen, I'm picking the Pats to be the AFC representative.
Me too.
But let me tell you something. I can see a scenario where the Chiefs beat the Patriots in round two.
Okay.
When Belichick goes out, it's in round two. Whether it's the Ravens or somebody like that, that divisional round, that's where they get beat. And I think if you're the Steelers, you are really, 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 really hoping to have to face, you know, the Jaguars to force the Chiefs, you know, making assumptions to go to Foxborough. The worst case scenario, if you're the Steelers, is you know, the Bills somehow win and get to go to Foxborough, because then New England does basically get a week off and they're rested and sitting back and waiting for the Steelers in that type of scenario. So you're the Steelers, man. You want to face the Jaguars. You want that scenario because that means that New England's got a fight on their hands against Kansas City.
Right.
And I think any alternative for the Steelers is a bad one, because then the Pats are rested. They would clobber the Bills. They would be waiting for the Steelers, who would come out of a matchup against the Chiefs, potentially, you know, coming, you know, against the Chiefs and then be bruised and broken and then having to face the Pats, that would be advantage Pats in a big way. So the way these scenarios could play out could really affect things. I still wouldn't be surprised. I'm not picking them, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Chiefs beat the Patriots in the divisional round because they've got the talent to be able to do it. Is this the year the fat man breaks through? I don't know. I mean, can Andy Reid be trusted in the playoffs? Probably not. More likely than not, Chiefs beat Titans, lose to the Pats in a close one, and then the Alex Smith sell off to the Browns begins, and the Pat Mahomes era begins.
Oy, ugh. Well, I will say this, that is a real clip and save in terms of New England and Kansas City in the second round. I'd be more inclined to believe it. The funny thing is everybody thinks back to the Thursday night opener to the season and the drubbing that the Chiefs put on the Patriots. At the same point in time, part of the reason the Chiefs look as iffy as they do now started that night. That was when the whole injury train started with the Chiefs, and to where you have to wonder defensively if they're going to be able to really do anything against New England. Plus, the Patriots have picked up defensively since that point. The first several games of the season, they looked like garbage. They have improved since then. One underplayed kind of thing in the media here, I think largely because the media loves to drive narratives, and particularly in a year, I think, where ratings and interest are down in the NFL somewhat. This whole kind of, we saw it a couple weeks ago with the New England-Pittsburgh thing. The rivalry between these teams, rivalry, it is, by my definition, you can't have something that one-sided and call it a rivalry. It's a thing where we've been kind of lulled to sleep, a lot of us, by the media if it happens, but if Pittsburgh rises up and wins in that game, that's one of the breakthrough victories in probably recent decades in the NFL, because they've never beaten the Patriots when it counts.
They haven't beaten them when it counts, and they're not going to beat them in Foxborough.
No.
And I don't know that Mike Tomlin is disciplined enough to be able to do that.
Right.
He and his coaching staff are just not disciplined enough. Him and Todd Haley, they're just not, I don't believe they're disciplined enough. Coaching staff, and that translates to their players to be able to beat New England in the AFC Championship game in late January. I don't see it. So I'm with you. I think we see it the same way. I think we see the difficulty of these matchups a little differently. I do think Jack Steelers is going to be a brawl, and I think Chiefs-Patriots is going to be very tight. You know, I think they're both going to be one-score affairs, and I think the Pats and the Steelers emerge with the Pats doing what they always do, which is finding a way to beat the undisciplined Pittsburgh Steelers in Foxborough and punching their ticket to the Super Bowl.
Absolutely. And as a lifelong North Coast guy, of course, I got no love for Pittsburgh. So I hope you're right about that. I hope Jacksonville can hang with them and maybe even find a way to get by. I would certainly like nothing better than that, even though I'm not holding my breath for it. The interesting thing is that in the NFC, the 3 and the 4 seeds are that much more elevated, certainly, than over the AFC. But those games are going to be sort of tough because the NFC as a whole is that much deeper. The 5 and the 6 teams, certainly live dogs in this scenario. Saturday night, you've got the defending NFC champion Falcons going to L.A. in a game where, again, the Rams almost looking reminiscent of that come-from-nowhere greatest show-on-turf team of 99, the way that they've kind of come through this year. And Atlanta, again, has not looked like the NFC champions for most of the year here. A real big hangover, but enough talent for them to be able to scrape into the playoffs nevertheless. I like the Rams in that one, but there's always the chance that the Falcons are going to put it together for one of the rare times all year. I don't see it, but there's a chance. And then on Sunday, you've got the trilogy there, Saints-Packers. I'm with everybody else that says it's going to be the Saints in here. They look to be the best balanced team in the NFC. Who would have thought that at the beginning of the year, if you include defense in the mix, but it's been true. Aside from, by the way, one of our favorite recurring guests on the show, Michael Harmon from Fox Sports Radio, who did pick the Saints at the beginning of the year, as he recently pointed out on the show here, you know, to at least make it to the NFC Championship game. So props to Michael Harmon for that one. I like the Saints in that one, but if you put a gun to my head and said one underdog to cover all weekend, I'd probably say the Panthers, because they're definitely the livest dog of the bunch. Even though they got dealt the most difficult hand, I think New Orleans is the best of the teams hosting this weekend here, but Carolina is probably the best of the teams that's playing on the road.
I agree with your analysis completely on both those games. I know that doesn't make for great radio, but when you look at the Falcons, they do have the talent to be able to rise up and to win a game. But I think Sean McVay keeps this thing going another week. He's got his guys at home, believing. There's a lot of weapons. The Falcons, as you point out, are limping into the playoffs. I don't think the Falcons believe in themselves. And when you get into West Coast trips, playing outdoors on grass, that's usually where the Falcons just sort of stumble on themselves. I don't actually expect this game to be all that competitive. I actually think the Rams are going to win this thing handedly. Despite the inexperience, if the Falcons have any, dog in this hunt, in that game, it's the fact that they've been there and they won't feel the pressure as much. But my guess is we've seen how they handle pressure, and I think they don't have what it takes to beat that high-flying offense that the Rams have put together. In the other game, I also don't think that game is going to be as close as we all hope and want it to be, because I don't believe in Cam Newton. The Panthers win when almost, I don't want to say in spite of him, but his quarterback play has not been good this year. His coaches understand what he is. They've designed a great system around him. They've built a really good defense. They've got some weapons in there with McCaffrey and that running game. But I don't believe in Cam Newton to be able to carry this team not past a Hall of Fame quarterback in Drew Brees. I know there are some people that think that Cam Newton's a Hall of Fame quarterback. I don't believe he is, not yet.
No.
Anyway, he still may achieve that, but he sure isn't at this point. So in a league that's driven by quarterbacks, I think you've got to go with Drew Brees at home with that powerful running game and greatly improved defense, because they're going to still go with that formula. But then if they need the old man to rise up and help them win that game, he's there ready to do it. So I just think both of these NFC games in the end end up being not all that competitive. I think Saints win handily. I think Rams win handily.
Well, the four divisional winners in the NFC, even though to whatever degree, all of them were surprises to some people or a lot of people. I picked the Eagles, but basically by default. I said I thought they'd win it at 8-8. I didn't see them coming as far as what they've done here. But the four divisional winners in the NFC are so good that if what you're talking about, that could very well happen. And as far as Cam Newton goes, I agree with you. I think we are a long ways off from seeing him dabbing on a bronze bust in Canton. And perhaps that image will be posted down there someday, just down I-77 from us. But I don't see it myself, at least at this point. Going to the next weekend here, we would be seeing a rematch of a game from a couple weeks ago here, where the Vikings were at home against the Rams. A game like that, I realize I'm dating myself here, but you got to have like a 70s icon to come out there and do the coin toss. Somebody from the Brady Bunch, G. Gordon Liddy, Peter Frampton. You got to do something to celebrate the 70s here if these two teams are playing in January against each other. Albeit playing indoors in a sterile environment doesn't really sort of fit the glory days of that rivalry. But, that's going to be one where I look at it and the temptation is to look at it and continue to go, as you and I have done in a number of these matchups thus far, and sort of go with wherever you see the edge at quarterback. And at this point in time, there's the thought that Case Keenum could always turn back into a pumpkin. The funny thing is, as I noted to Michael Harmon a couple weeks ago, you got the 79 Rams and the 84 49ers that have come the closest to playing a Super Bowl at home. They played in their home markets, if not their home stadiums. Kind of ironic that the Vikings need Case Keenum to sort of stay as the 79 Vince Ferragamo in order to make it happen. Can he do that? In the end, with that defense, I think he can, and credit to you for having called it with the Vikings this year as a divisional winner. You saw it coming even before Aaron Rodgers went down. It was easier for the rest of us to see it once he went down, but you saw it ahead of time, I give you that. What might be a surprise to you, what might not be, is I look at the other game there, a dome team on the road in the Saints. I'm going to take them over the Eagles because I think the Eagles are going to be a little bit too one-dimensional in there. Nick Foles, I think, is going to get pretty thoroughly exposed. He has great weapons to work with. Doug Peterson has crafted a great system there, enough so that former Browns offensive coach John DeFilippo is a hot head coaching commodity right now for his work with Carson Wentz. But I'm going to take New Orleans in that game and take them to make it to the NFC Championship game, as Michael Harmon forecast at the beginning of the year.
I struggled with that Saints-Eagles matchup because the Saints are a better team, I believe, right now. Again, quarterback league. Who do you got, Drew Brees or Nick Foles?
Yeah.
The outdoors part in the cold concerned me, but I decided, nope, let's keep with the hot hand and the quarterback and that running game. And the Eagles have a great running game. I'm with you. I think hard-fought contest, and the Saints, I think, get by the Eagles to play for the NFC Championship game, for the NFC Championship against the aforementioned Minnesota Vikings. They find a way with that defense to get enough done to stop the Rams. This is where the wheels fall off on second-year quarterback Jared Goff, and you know, you can't audible your way out of that. Case Keenum keeps it rolling, because why not? Why not make it really hard for the Vikings brass to have to make a decision at the end of the year? When, you know, the Browns don't have one quarterback, and the Vikings basically have three. And they're going to have to make some decisions at the end of the year. Wouldn't it be a lot more interesting for them if they said goodbye to a guy that led them to the NFC Championship game? So I agree. I think you're going to have Vikings at home hosting the Saints in the NFC Championship game.
And what's funny is, aside from the venue, you're looking at a rematch of the only time that the Saints made it to the Super Bowl, that very memorable game with Brett Favre throwing the critical interception down the stretch there. And New Orleans is obviously hoping that that's a good omen for the NFC Championship game the week to follow, if you and I are correct on what that's going to be. And again, I like it this way when the better game is going to be in prime time. It's hard to see the AFC having a game that is really going to be something we find enthralling in the early spot. This is beautiful. I always have a championship Sunday party over my place. You are welcome, my friend, even though I know it's a haul for you. But I always like to have the late game be better. Like last year, it broke up early. Like, ugh, New England-Pittsburgh. Who cares about sticking around to watch this one? This year should be a little lively going through the evening, really whatever combination of teams we're talking about here, because if you and I are right, that's going to be a great game. If we're wrong, who cares? You can almost mix and match in the NFC field and say it's going to be a tremendous NFC championship game, at least going in on paper. This is one where I look at it, and again, it's hard to pick against Minnesota. It's hard to pick against them at home. It's hard to pick against them with the chance to host a Super Bowl right after the NFC Championship game, as they would be doing, but I'm about to do that. I look at the balance of New Orleans right now, and if they can survive the week before in the cold, that might be the harder part of getting over the hump, because I just think there's a decent chance they can find a way. It's a young defense that they have. It's a younger defense than Minnesota's one. The thing that kind of pisses me off about the NFL schedule makers, this will be a rematch of week one. This should have been a game that where they should have the foresight to put this in November or December. We slept on this one when it happened week one. How did we know either of these two teams was that good? We deserved to see the game the first time around and be able to savor it, much like Vikings-Rams, much like Rams-Eagles. That's a game we should have seen when we knew it meant something. We snored on it. At least I know I did. We won't if it happens again. I'll take the Saints to take what I'm guessing would be an upset on the road, but who even knows with a line like that? How do you make Drew Brees an underdog? Regardless, gun to my head, I say the Saints go to the Super Bowl.
The only reason that that was a game that anybody paid attention to in Week 1 was because of Adrian Peterson being with the Saints.
Yes.
At that moment. Now, of course, you know, he wasn't basically seeing the field, but that was the storyline Week 1, and I think that was why they played it out that way. I'm with you. You've got to go with the quarterback, and it's Drew Brees and that new talented running game finding a way to beat inexperienced. Finally, the wheels come off the Case Keenum experience, and the Saints win and go on to the Super Bowl. I can't believe you and I basically see every one of these games exactly the same way. But that's basically what we've got right now. You and I are chalk on this entire playoffs.
It is remarkable. It is
right down the line. So I'm with you. I've got Patriots Saints in the Super Bowl. In what will be in essence a rematch for the Patriots with the NFC South.
Well, what's funny is the same thing happened on my World Series preview, or not World Series, MLB playoffs preview with Steve Callis, another one of our FDH Lounge dignitaries. We both had it as Indians over Dodgers, and I don't think we disagreed on a single series going in, and you saw what happened there. So there's not necessarily any reason for anybody to take this to the bank just because you and I are saying it on down the line in alignment here. But the thing
I think there's every reason for people to go ahead and go the other way on this whole thing.
Very well could be. And I'll tell you what would be delicious about this scenario is that you know at midfield, you know that Sean Payton's got enough of the wrestling heel in him after if they're doing a trophy celebration in midfield for the NFC Championship to yell out into the microphone, "We'll be back in 2 weeks, Twin Cities."
Or just announce he's not taking his team out of Minnesota.
Yeah. We packed our bags. We're prepared to stay for 2 weeks. We knew this was going to happen. So, yeah, that would be that would be really funny. That would be almost like a Belichick-level type move there, which, ironically, if they make it to that point, you and I have got them slated to play New England in there. And what's funny is, beginning of the season, I picked New England to play Green Bay in the Super Bowl. I thought, you know, Aaron Rodgers versus Tom Brady is the mega quarterback Super Bowl that we haven't seen, that we've been waiting for. I thought this was going to be the year for it. You know, Drew Brees, in the popular imagination, not too far back of those other two guys. I mean, a lot of people probably think of him as number three out of that bunch, but certainly not that distant necessarily. So to get to see Brees and Brady in a Super Bowl, which we've never seen, given that we got to see Brees against Peyton Manning previously, this would be a real treat along those lines. I think in a year of down ratings, a Super Bowl like that would probably be just the goose that NBC needs to get it going again here and really produce a big rating. But when I look at this, a lot of times what kind of jumps out to me is when I look at the four units here, the offense and the defense for each team. There's no question at all in anybody's mind the weakest of the four units is the New England defense, and maybe by a decent margin. I see that playing out. I would see it being a close game, but I would see New England ultimately going down in the end, New Orleans winning their second Super Bowl as a franchise and the second one for Brees and the aforementioned Sean Payton.
You know, my brain says you go with Brady and Belichick. Go with Brady and Belichick. My God, how can you not? But they don't win every Super Bowl. The Giants bested them twice. And I just feel like at some point that has to end. And I'm wondering if a Super Bowl loss with Brady Belichick and the seemingly like there's starting to be some cracks in the facade in Foxborough in terms of Tom's trainer, Belichick banning him. Belichick sounds a lot like Belichick earlier in the year, was almost prepared to say we're going to go with Jimmy moving forward. It sounds like there's a possibility that Kraft sided with Tommy and said, no, Brady's our guy, because Kraft and Brady have such a strong relationship. It's not a relationship that Belichick and Kraft actually have. I think that there is some cracks in the New England facade, in the, you know, the great monolith that is, has always been perceived. And I think a Super Bowl loss to the Saints could accelerate those cracks, especially as we watch Jimmy G walk off to San Francisco for literally nothing, and win five games and look like a Pro Bowl quarterback. And I think that will start, a Super Bowl loss will start an off season of a game, especially if it's one where Tom Brady plays as badly as he did for three quarters as he did last Super Bowl. He got it together in the fourth quarter when it mattered. But let's be honest, for three quarters in that game last year, he looked terrible. And I think, just because I'm a believer in the storyline, I think the Saints beat the Patriots, and I think that it starts a spiral with New England. We could be looking at the beginning of the end. Saints Super Bowl champions this year. Drew Brees gets to hoist another one, punches his ticket to Canton, and that's how we end the season.
Well, it would be a first ballot ticket. I think he's already there, but yeah, as far as a no-brainer and 90-plus percent of the vote, I would agree with you on that. I'll go a step further in the New England scenario that you're laying out, because I go back to the last of their Super Bowls from their first run, the one in Jacksonville that they played, and I remember commenting on the show at the time, or a predecessor show on the Sports Talk Network, as the case may have been, but saying it's ironic that Paul McCartney is playing at halftime because the coaching Beatles are about to be getting broken up. Remember, that was the year that Weiss and Crennel both left for head coaching jobs, and it was the threesome with Belichick that everybody was quoting, like they've been together, they've, you know, as coordinators and a head coach at basically a higher level than anybody else. You look at it now, Matt Patricia, who I think is going to be a very good coach somewhere, looks like he's going to get a look at it. Josh McDaniels, I mean, yeah, I will have my doubts about his temperament as a head coach. He was such a spoiled brat the first time around. You wonder if he learned his lessons or not the way that Belichick did. That's another scenario right there. If that coaching staff splinters, it took them years to recover from that the first time around, and they don't have years left in this run.
I'd say the run is almost over, and depending on how bad the rift may actually be, you could see, I mean, I'm going to paint a picture that could be pretty horrific for Pats fans, which is, you know, I think it's more likely if they win, but if they were to lose, you know, would Belichick contemplate walking? He lost both of his coordinators. If Tommy looks average in the Super Bowl loss after he was arguing with Kraft that Garoppolo was the future and that they needed to move on from Tom, we both know Belichick is cold as ice when it comes to that stuff. There is no sentimentality. And it does sound a little bit like that Bill knows the end is nigh for Tom and wanted to make some changes or prepare to make that change. And, you know, you could see a scenario where I can see a scenario where that rift may be big, and I don't know how it ends. But it could end up being, as you say, you know, pointing out the loss of for sure two coordinators. It could be quite staggering for the Pats. We could be looking at the final run for New England. I will say just one last thing. Just to add a little bit of something, since you and I went, I think probably the first time ever you and I went totally chalk.
Yes.
And we're in total agreement on how we see these playoffs playing out. But I, from a sentimental standpoint, when you talk about the throwback, I know Browns fans won't want to hear it, but man, there is a part of me that would love to see the Super Bowl 14 rematch, Steelers Rams. There is just some part of me that would love to see a Super Bowl 14 rematch. If you and I are not correct, that might be the matchup I would love to be able to see. A throwback to my childhood. One of the lasting memories for me being as a child watching that Super Bowl, and one of the things that I remember more than anything, besides the Steeler dominance over the Rams, was the Rams cheerleaders crying along the sidelines.
Yeah.
You talk about things that stick out in your mind as a child watching, you know, watching a sporting event. And I remember rooting for the Rams in that game, being so disappointed. But so if we can't be right, I may be secretly rooting for the Steelers Rams Super Bowl 14 rematch just for a nice bit of nostalgia.
Well, only if you could guarantee me a different outcome, because I loathed the Steelers even then. But yeah, I remember that game, and it was a fun game. The Steelers pulled away late, but it was a pretty spirited game much of the way through. Always fun to watch a big game at the Rose Bowl, the opposite of some of these antiseptic stadiums here. And much as we saw in this year's actual Rose Bowl game itself, it really does a lot for the atmosphere. And for the whole thing with New England, my final thoughts on what you were saying there, two things. One, you said Belichick's not sentimental. The hell you say, hashtag court calling bootlegs for Bernie. And second of all, basically, it sounds like the mood that you're describing, what's going to be hanging on at Barstool Sports, it'll be the same as the mood after last year's Eastern Conference Finals in the NBA and this year's Eastern Conference Finals in the NBA.
Well, we'll see about that this year. I do suspect that it's the Cavs again in the Eastern Conference, but I don't know. It's a long way to go on that. But,
well,
yeah, I think Barstool is going to be a little surly, let's put it that way. And I think that, you know, these things go in cycles and in terms of cities as well. And I think that we could be looking at the sunset for the great Patriots run and that love affair with New England, and we could be looking at the emergence of a great Celtics run over the next decade, sort of to take its place in terms of the hearts and minds of chavs everywhere.
Well, you've gone out on a limb with a few predictions here. I feel some degree of pressure to join you in that. So my long shot prediction for 2018, John Skipper will be named the new CEO of Barstool Sports. You heard it here first, Chris.
Well, apparently it's fitting.
Yeah.
Barstool,
yes. Rumor has it, anyways. Who knew? Who knew he was more simpatico with that atmosphere than we ever guessed, huh? But
that's right.
As they say, another story for another day. But in the meantime, always fun breaking down the football with you, my man. Much as we did for the preseason show. Thank you so much for being a part of it again here today, buddy.
All right, I appreciate it, Rick. Thanks for having me on.
All right, thanks for being on, buddy. My good friend and fellow original FDH Lounge dignitary, Chris Galloway, he and I breaking it all down for you for the 2017-18 NFL playoffs.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.